Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, car, what else?
Cars.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it. No.
But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Tony, we've been teasing it for a long time. It's finally here. Our EV special.
Someone that knows what he's talking about for a change.
Because we don't. We have to introduce you, Sam. Welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for coming.
Specialist thing. I'm starting to feel like... What the hell have I done?
You are a brave man. Not for coming on the podcast, but for coming to a room with Tony here. Yeah. I would say resident EV hater. Yeah. And you did turn up in a Tesla today, right?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
Did he?
You turned up in a Tesla.
Did you really?
Yeah, Model 3.
How funny would it have been if he'd have turned out in a big V12?
I think he would have said, please don't talk about this on the podcast.
I'd have dropped him right in it.
You would have immediately. Before we go any further, we should probably credify. Have I just made that word up? I think I have. It's a good word though. At least, you know, explain why you are our expert this week.
We're going to certify you.
That's the word. Verify you as if you were on Instagram.
Or verify, yeah, we're going to blue tick you.
Is that certified before you crucify?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. If you were to elevator pitch yourself to someone, could you explain to our audiences, I guess, a little bit of your background in the world of EVs? We can go right back to school if you want, but I think let's keep it on EVs.
Let's not kill the audience straight away, right? So I've been driving EVs for 18 plus years, I think. I started in two-wheeled motorbikes and scooters back in early 2000s, just in seeing them all in China, and just the fact there's millions of them everywhere. There was 20 years ago, let alone today. So started in that sort of sphere and started to learn a lot about EVs at the beginning, but it was too early to market, really. Someone on my right might say it still is, but we'll come to that. And then I ran my own delivery company in central London for 10 years called Newt, which was a last mile delivery company using a fully electric fleet. So grew that from nothing to something. And then more recently, once I sold that, I then joined GridServe, who are building amazing infrastructure and solar and hybrid developments all over the country. So the bit I'm focused on is the vehicle side, but also a little bit on the infrastructure as well. So that's one of the hot topics, as it's been on your podcast previously, around infrastructure. And I now work for a company that's building out that in serious numbers. So for me, as an EV evangelist, it's quite a good place to be.
I can imagine. Can I ask, though, was there ever a time when you were into petrol cars? I said, were you ever a petrol head?
A little bit. My parents are both ex-racing drivers. I used to race karts when I was a young lad. Wasn't very good, but I did.
We have some experience with that.
No, I'm good.
No, you're not.
I've always loved cars. Always loved cars. But I think when I got the hook into EVs all those years ago, I just thought, yeah, this is the future, and it's really good fun, and it's just a case of the technology developing and getting better so it becomes more mainstream. And the very fact that you have kindly invited me onto things like this starts to make me think that at least it's getting into more of the mainstream sort of logic and mindset, whereas a few years ago it would be preaching to the choir every time. So all of my people I would present to in the past have been the people that are sort of already converted, whereas with some trepidation I'm on a forum like this where the audience is probably a little bit more skeptical at this point in time, and rightly so, and fair enough, you know.
And I wouldn't even say we're that mainstream. I think we're still quite niche. You know, we are a petrolhead enthusiast kind of audience. You know, definitely in terms of this podcast, Tony, I would say, is potentially even an EV hater. I mean, you are definitely against the idea of electric vehicles at the moment.
Yeah.
Whilst I'm definitely way more open to it, I've had positive experiences with the cars, but not the infrastructure. And I see the potential and also the benefits of at least inner city electric vehicles. So, but you know, but even still, despite that, we are people who love V12s, V8s, V10, you know, big engines, performance cars. And it's been interesting over the last year or so since we've been doing more of these podcasts to see how many of our audience have been trying to make that leap across to EVs. You know, we have seen a lot of Taycan buyers potentially, or specifically even. But more and more, you know, when we talk about electric vehicles, the comment section does light up with people who are diehard obsessives and are telling us how much we're getting wrong. People who've maybe put a foot into that world and are still trying to figure it out. And then people like Tony who are just like, death to the EV.
It's funny you should say that because I made a couple of notes.
Oh, God. Watch out, Tony.
And just a couple of your quotes, Tony. One was National Grid would fry, which is false.
Straight in.
It's like a mobile phone battery. No, it's not. Batteries only last 7 or 8 years. That's not true either. But you did say, you also, and I quote, pissing in the wind, which I think is true. So I'll take that one.
Was actually going to be nice, but I'm going to really go in. I'm going to finish him off.
Already my favourite episode I've ever done. Someone's just coming to ruin Tony's day. Well, you know, Sam, you've set it up perfectly. I think, you know, we've got lots to talk about, and some of the patrons have been very kind and submitted some questions as well that we want to get onto. Yeah. But let's just tackle those kind of three points really to kickstart things, because it is something that we do actually repeat quite a lot, and they're things that either we've been told or picked up on from various sources. But obviously, let's try and debunk those myths. So let's kick things off. I guess your first point was National Grid would fry. Was that your?
Well, that was Tony's quote. Tony's
quote. But to be fair, I have heard as well. You know, there's a very popular YouTuber in my space called Harry Metcalf or Harry's Garage, who's a farmer as well, and he shares a lot. I think, is it Grid Watch? Is that right? Or there's somewhere you can get some stats on National Grid usage here in the UK, and he shares some of these tweets and talks about usage and things like that. And I've also heard from people who, you know, utilities business talking about the potential of the grid frying. If, for example, everyone in London today switched to an EV, if everyone in this entire city was driving an EV, would the grid fry? What's the capacity there?
So no, it wouldn't, is the answer. A very good friend of mine, Graham Cooper, who works at National Grid, I'm often talking to, and he writes a lot of stuff on myth busting in terms of this sort of topic. So it's you know, my source of information is reasonably decent. But the example he's always given is that back in 2002, when we were just generally consuming energy, we were using about 62 gigawatts of energy per year. Now, in more recent years, as in now, because everything is just more efficient, all of our electronics is more efficient, we use 16% less energy now than we did then. So already we've dropped the consumption per capita on the basis that we're more efficient with the way we use energy.
Even with EVs.
Well, there aren't that many yet, but this is the reason for that. And this is the crux of the topic, is that if everybody were to be in an EV tomorrow, which is impossible, it's not going to happen because everything needs to ramp
scale up.
But if it did, we would need around 10% more capacity to support it. So we were using 16% more 18 years ago.
Okay.
So the energy issue isn't an issue. There is sufficient capacity by virtue of the energy we're generating, because we've already generated enough 18 odd years ago. So we know we can do it. The thing which is more important is around the energy capacity and the smartness in the way we use the energy. Because if everyone is trying to charge an EV at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and everyone's doing the same thing, it's not going to work. There's just not enough to do that. So what we need to get intelligent about is how we use the energy, not about whether there's enough of it.
Okay.
So it's all about the smartness. So when I plug my car in at the end of the day, I plug it in at 5 in the afternoon or whatever, or evening, it won't start charging until 12:30 at night for two reasons. One, because I've set it that way. And the second reason, it's cheaper for me to charge it. It's 10 pence a kilowatt hour less to charge it that time in the morning. So I think the important thing is that we need to get clever in the way that we distribute the energy, and then we'll be fine. But this whole sort of myth of, oh, everyone's having an EV tomorrow, the world's going to go and the world's going to end, it's just not going to happen. Because we're completely and utterly planned for it. National Grid is planning and preparing for it on every day. It's not, there isn't going to be some horror show of an event.
Of a surge,
suddenly everyone's got an EV overnight and suddenly we're not going to be able to. It's just not going to happen. It's just,
you know, we got so much planning has already gone into it. There's so much more renewables in this country than there was before. In 2019, we had far more renewable energy generated than we did in fossil fuels. I'm sure statistically last year was even better. We're, you know, grid server producing solar farms, like they're going out of fashion. We've got wind farms going up. We've got, there's so much renewable energy as well that's this growing all of the time. So that's one myth that it's just not going to happen.
Well,
that's
Tony's foaming at the mouth. So. Go.
Well, you've contradicted yourself, boy, because you just said that if everyone switches their electric car on at 5 o'clock, it's not going to work. So that was what I was trying to put across. You're right that there'll be smart meters and people will charge them at certain points of the day, but if you cut your hand off in the middle of the night and your car's not charged and you need to go to the hospital, what'd you do then?
Well, if everyone tried to fill their car up with petrol at the same time, that's not going to work either, is it? But you it's all distributed across and everybody uses it at different times in order to have enough supply for everyone when they need it.
That's also correct, but there's also...
And I'm not planning on cutting my arm off in the middle of the night either.
No, accidents happen, firstly. There's other scenarios as well. You could, not you personally, but your wife could be about to give birth. The ambulances are going to be electric. What if for any reason they're not charged properly? The petrol thing that you've just said, that's fair enough. The problem I have with the...
I get one point for that.
No, he hasn't got any points yet. The thing I'd say about the petrol, which is my biggest problem with EVs as well, is that the time it takes to charge them up. You know, if everyone queued up for petrol, it wouldn't take... The queue would be a lot quicker to go down than it would be if you like to charge our load of electric vehicles.
I'll jump in and say, I assume that is ever improving though, right? Surely, you know, there is the ability to charge some vehicles with some chargers in a short time, and that's got to be decreasing. I assume that's part of the forward planning.
Yeah, I mean, everything's forward planned. You know, no one's suggesting that everyone needs to be in an EV overnight and the infrastructure is yet ready for it anyway, because it isn't. You know, that's the reality of it.
When will it be ready?
Well, it's growing all the time. You know, we put in 12 high-powered chargers in Rugby service station the other week. You know,
they all work.
They all work. They're all being utilised every day. It's brilliant. Your point about the ambulance is a good one. I mean, that's a massive vehicle, really, really heavy. It's got loads of kit in it. The chances of turning that electric in the next few years is pretty minimal.
Because, fire engines?
Well, the same thing. The reality.
Police.
The reality is that's going to take some time before mm-hmm. those big things can be moved around an EV. But the cars, small light vans, you know, I had a fleet of 120 vehicles, electric vehicles in London every day.
And a long time ago as well.
Working fine. Yeah. Started that 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. So... I've proven it works because I did it.
You know? Yeah.
I'm not just talking about it. I did it.
Yeah. But in a very confined area, by the way, in central London, where you do the odd mile here and there. Oh. You didn't go to Scotland to deliver a parcel, did you? You stayed in central London.
No. Yeah. Again, it's going to take time before vehicles can travel the whole length of the country in one hit. Mm. In the same way, you can't do it with the petrol either. But you know.
Can.
What?
Depends which car you're into.
Yeah. If you get in a big V12 Ferrari, no chance.
You're going to be stopping six times on the way
out. In most normal cars, on a tank of fuel, you'd be able to drive to Scotland. No problem.
I think the point being that, as we've spoken about before, it's a mentality change, right? Because in a petrol vehicle, in a diesel vehicle, even if you can't manage it on one tank, it might add 5-10 minutes to your journey length. And so you're essentially going in one flow, where at the moment, with the current infrastructure and setup, the chances of finding a high-speed charger on that journey, it being free, it working at that point in time or working with your car, are small. So therefore, you're probably going to be adding an hour, 2 hours to your journey time, depending on how many stops you need to make. So at the moment, to anyone who's doing that for... If you're going on a nice, lovely trip with your family and you're no big rush, sure, you build it into your strategy. You have a nice time at whichever service station. They're all beautiful. And I was being sarcastic there. I was adding on to the journey. But of course, I think Tony's big hesitance with a lot of this, for example, if he was to change his work van or his work vehicle, which he uses to go and pick up and buy stock and swap things over, he's always on the go and time is money. So at the moment when you're having to take that time out to charge... That is also, you know, costing money theoretically. It's slowing you down and what you can achieve. So I'm assuming back 10 years ago when you were running the van fleet, how many, each of those vans must have still covered a fair distance going in and around London all day, every day. Would they do that on one charge or did they have to take a break back then?
Comfortably did it on charge. You know, the guys were doing 30, 40 miles a day, doing 200 drops a day. They were really, really highly productive. We can't just look at things in isolation in any of the economics, right? So some of the things you just raised, absolutely valid. But some of the asset value of the vehicles are more expensive, but then I make it back on no congestion charge, no VAT, no road tax, no very little running cost, no fuel, obviously. So in the round, it made business sense because I was able to balance it all out so that I gained on some and lost on other areas. But ultimately, it became, you know, a business that could make a profit. And there's a practicality to that. And as far as charging, you know, I've done thousands and thousands of miles in EVs over the years, and it's getting easier every single time. I came here today, I stopped at a charger for 10, 15 minutes. I, by the time I'd had a wee, I checked my emails, I'd have made a phone call. I was back on the road with an extra 80, 90 miles. You know, I'd barely even known I'd stopped. And I only did that so that I, on the way home tonight, I don't even have to think about it. Go all the way home, not a problem. I could probably have done the journey in one hit anyway. But I baked in. I'd been driving for 2 hours. I baked in a bit of a time to, you know, grab a coffee, check my emails, and charging became secondary. And I'm not suggesting that's the same for everyone right now, but even today, I've proved that it's not a problem. And it's only 20 minutes. I had to leave a little bit earlier just to do that, just to make sure I got back just fine. So, you know, I'm not suggesting for a second it's perfect, but it's totally doable. I mean, I've been doing it for years.
And is that because you've been doing it for years? Because I think one thing is, you know, these, let's take away petrol heads, people who are just enthused by the idea of an electric vehicle. Because I know lots of friends who've never thought of having a car, either live in central London or outside, who are suddenly like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go buy an EV. Like, oh, whether that's a Taycan or just a, I don't know, a smaller one, but an Audi e-tron or whatever. That's really bad.
It's actually quite a bit bigger.
I only know the premium models.
A Golfy.
What
or
a dick. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. You know, they're now considering these. But if it's your first time, your brain isn't programmed like that. You've become very good and very well trained at when and how to sort of keep your car going at the best time. So that thought of just chucking on 80 or 90 miles just to mean that you can get home in one charge, most people, I think, will think, I've got to charge it fully. And so that must take time to, you know, wrap your head around and figure out. So you've, what's your sort of advice there? Because I think that's still a barrier to entry. I.e., if I went and bought an EV today, I would get frustrated. And I think I would then think this isn't worth it and sell it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably part of the challenge we've got to get over. And being in forums like this is, you know, frankly a privilege because it means that we get to talk about it in a real world environment and address some of those concerns. And I think the reality for a lot of people that live in London is that a lot of they don't have access to a garage or a driveway to charge. So we've got to think
of
another way of doing it, and that's where the infrastructure needs to catch up. I think the reality is that trying to change culture or trying to change people's behaviour, especially the likes of Tony, for example, is going to be a tough sell. So we've got to find ways of continually making it more fitting and befitting to the way in which he is used to driving around now. You can't do 500 miles in one go on an EV right now, and you can't fill up in 10 minutes or 5 minutes as you do with a petrol, but you can do the length of the country on a couple of charges, which might take you 40 minutes, say, on a couple of charges. So it's not a million miles away, and it's getting better all the time. The Taycan, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 on the 800 volt platform is enabling much, much faster charging, at loads more energy in a short period of time. So every single month, almost, there's another advancement in the technology, which means it's getting closer to the scenario that we're all traditionally used to of just jumping in a car and then going to the petrol station. And for the other 60% of people that do have off-street parking in the UK, they've got the luxury of being able to fill that thing up with energy while they're sleeping. They don't have to go to a petrol station anymore at all, because nearly all of their needs, energy needs, will be delivered while they're asleep. And most people don't travel that far in any direction anyway. You know, it's literally tens of miles at maximum, the average consumption of miles in this country. So, but we all want that comfort of knowing if we want to go 300 miles, we can. And that's it doesn't matter that you only do very short journeys if one in and 30 of them is a long journey. You want to know that when you're going up the services that you can stop at something like a grid serve electric highway, for example, bang in loads of energy and then be on your way.
I was going to let you jump in, Tony, if you wanted to. Okay, fine. So there was one point you made a little bit earlier where you said, obviously, sort of cost, whilst the cost of the vehicle might be higher, you can save in other places. Is charging getting more expensive? Because I definitely remember I had that e-tron for a while, and I did a full charge, and it was 30 odd quid or something like that, where I definitely think there was a preconception at one point that charging was free. So is it now becoming more expensive?
There's a really broad range of prices in the market. And there was a time when a lot of the network was free. A lot of the stuff in Source London in London was free. And then people started charging for it. It was a shock and awe that it wasn't free anymore. But, you know, obviously someone's got to pay for energy in the same way you pay for fuel. There's a real massive price disparity in the marketplace at the moment. So a grid serve on one scale is 24 pence a kilowatt hour, which is about 20 or 30% more than you pay at home.
But there's other networks that charge nearly three times that. In fact, in some cases, even more. So there is areas where it's very, very affordable, and there's other providers that are overpriced in the market. So there are some pretty painful examples out there of charging and costing £30-40 to fill up with energy, but that's not the case everywhere. And I think the market, again, because it's in embryonic, it will naturally find its rhythm, and it'll find where the price point needs to be. There's an awful lot of investment gone into infrastructure that needs to be recovered somewhere. And the market needs to balance itself out, so you get to that, to where the pence per kilowatt hour should be, which is the equivalent of pence per litre. So we've just got to find that balance, but there are places where it's too high.
Well, what the experiences that I've had, it's been more expensive than fuel. And
more expensive than fuel?
Yeah. I charged an i3 up. I had to get it back from Yorkshire. It's not the best example of a car because it only does 100 miles to range. It's not a great example, but I needed to get that car from north to south.
Right.
The only way I'd do it was drive it. We had to stop three times, 40 minutes at a time, however long it was, 45 minutes, however long it was, and we paid £12 a time to charge it, something like that. We had a Golf GTD. I told you this story.
Yeah, but I thought you were £18 all in, but I didn't realise you stopped three times.
Yeah, it was about £30 or whatever, a bit more, £35 maybe. We had a Golf GTD that we went up and back on the same fuel.
Yeah.
In terms of fuel. And as well, I disagree with the pricing. I understand that as things move on and you've got to have your money back, but there's a wonderful thing in this country called tax, which we pay a lot on fuel. So if electricity is priced at that money now, before, and it's supposed to be cheaper now, it's this big boom of go and buy an electric car because, yeah, it's a bit more expensive, but it's cheap or free to run. It's not. And there's no tax element yet. That's coming when everyone's got it, because that's how they get their money. They're not going to release fuel from the world and say, right, we're not spending any money on fuel anymore. There's a huge void in tax. That'll go on electric. So it'll be more. And the cars will be more. You'll end up renting them. The way that they package them together and you buy them will be a different way. And they'll probably end up even selling the power differently, these manufacturers, of how you release power so you can have it on demand, probably on your phone. But there'll be a price, there'll be a charge for it, and it'll be more.
I think that the overall pricing structure in the UK on the roads is going to change anyway, inevitably. I mean, we all know there's a ban on petrol and diesel anyway by 2030, so it's going to have to change. The economics of how they get their tax for the consumption needs to change. But I think at the same time, we've got incentives to kickstart the market. So we've got plug-in car grants. We've got massive reduction in benefit in kind tax for company cars, and all those things will naturally change over time. And we're in this, whether you like it or not, we're in this transitionary period between ICE and EV. And there has to be an incentive to kickstart the market, but at the same time, that needs to be tapered off. Not some sticky plaster, again, overnight, all of a sudden, everything's too expensive. It needs to be tapered. But the EVs on the road still need to pay for the road.
Yeah, of
course. So we've got to just find, the government's got to find the right mechanism to blend that in. But, we're in this transitionary period, so it's got to be affordable for everybody, but it's also got to be a suitable economic transition.
I mean, we've already seen that electric cars are more affordable than what they were 5 years ago. They are, all these manufacturers, they are, because they're making more of them. The biggest problem I have with them is, I know you've mentioned the infrastructure, but the more cars that hit the market, the worse it's going to become. Are you going to be able to grow that infrastructure quick enough by 2030? Because you're miles off at the minute. Let's be honest, we're miles off in terms of how we charge them, how we not to some people, but to a lot of people like me that use them as a tool, as a business. And there's so many businessmen that's how they use their cars. There's another problem, lorries as well. I don't think, how do you build batteries and electrics?
Well, I guess that's a whole other topic, right? Is heavy weighted vehicles, planes, ships, lorries, which I suppose we can come on, but I want to pick up, that's a really good point that Tony was making there. Because I think you mentioned before that, it's not a sort of, let's all go EV now, but I would actually disagree. I think that's very much the case. I think from governments around the world, but also from manufacturers, there's this thought of, it's all EV. I mean, Jaguar, a brand I love completely, are going all EV. There's all these brands who are coming out and declaring, that's all you're going to be able to buy. So I actually feel an unbelievable amount of pressure and almost fear that very soon I'm not going to be able to buy anything else. My mum had an Evoque for years. They've just confirmed that the next Evoque is going to be all EV. So I said to her, "That's you're out. That's it. You're done." So I actually think that there is a chance that there'll be more EV demand or more EV ownership before infrastructure levels. But talk to us about that, because you know we have been going through it with the infrastructure. There is definitely a push for us to buy EVs. Is that being equaled in the infrastructure?
I think the infrastructure is behind and it needs to catch up, and it is. I mean, the guys like GridServe are building phenomenal amounts of electric forecourts with huge amounts of charging connectors and charging 30. The one in Braintree, it's got 36 chargers on one site with chargers that can go up to 350 kilowatts, which is way more than even the Taycan can take right now. So we future-proofed it as well to make sure that you can bang in a couple of hundred miles of range.
In Braintree.
Well, that's one of over 100.
There's four people that live in Braintree.
Well, what's up, Braintree?
No, well, but you know what I mean. Yeah, like, put it in the middle of a field. Well done, guys.
Well, it's not in the middle of a field. Moreover, we're building over 100 of them over the next 5 years. We've just acquired part of the electric highway, which is 85% of the service station network, and we're building a layer of hubs beneath it. So there'll be and that's just what we're doing. I'm not suggesting for a second that we can do it on our own, because we can't.
That's a problem in London.
Everybody else needs to do the same thing.
It's a problem in London, by the way, because space.
Yeah, but you know they're doing clever things in London with telephone poles and things like that. I quite like the idea of being able to charge, you know, plug into telephone poles and light poles.
Yeah, it'll be all right until someone unplugs it.
Just because
you can't do because it's locked in.
Do you not know that? Do you not know that when you when you plug in a charger, it locks?
I do actually know that. Yeah, but okay. Well, someone vandalises it because that can happen.
Well, someone vandalised a car anyway.
Exactly. Good point.
Yeah. Like, did you see that TVR footage at the weekend? No. From the, I think it was pro-Palestine protest and TVR in South Kensington, and guys are just jumping on it and kicking it and destroying it. It wasn't an EV.
If someone vandalises the car, you can still drive it. If someone vandalises an EV, you can't because you've cut the charge and it won't go. Thank you. Good night.
No, but hold on a sec. Your point being...
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Why? Because what's that then?
What you're saying, it's like saying somebody cutting the petrol hose as you're refueling and therefore you can no longer go because you haven't got any fuel in your car.
Exactly.
The vandalizing of an EV only matters if they cut the charging
point. But that's
point.
What they would do.
But
why?
Why?
Why not?
Well, what? But do they cut petrol hose pipes?
Because people vandalize things normally to be inconvenient and awful and horrible.
How often do people siphon fuel these days?
They can't.
What do you mean? Oh, okay, fine, they can't. But stop saying thank you. You don't win.
You
don't
can I start doing the same thing?
Yeah, thank you. Tick, win for me.
Let's move on, next one.
Just so that people, because I think we should have clarified at the beginning, whilst it's great that you're here, Sam, this is not a GridServe-sponsored podcast.
No, sorry.
So who else in the space is, because BP, right, have just done the, is it the Ionity stuff? Or what are they doing there? I know Shell are doing a lot of...
Yeah, there's Ionity, there's Shell, there's BP, there's Ubertricity, who you referenced before, the lamppost charging, Source London. There's a myriad of different charge point operators, CPOs, as we call them, and they all do different things as well. So
that's what I was going to ask.
We've got on-street charging, we've got lamppost charging, we've got high-power charging, we've got hubs, we've got stuff in rural areas. It's all growing. There's something like 15,000 different connections available in the UK at the moment in terms of public sockets you can plug into and get energy from. That does flatter deceive because a lot of that stuff is probably not where you want it to be and it's too slow. But there's 5,000 connectors out there, 8,000 petrol stations, and it's hard to compare the two because they're very different things, but it's the beginning of the change. It's the beginning of more and more things going in the ground. And certainly the stuff at the service stations is going to be a big thing because that's where, certainly, you know, the major arteries throughout the UK, that's where a lot of the power needs to be and then needs to be delivered to vehicles from those locations. But there's lots and lots of different types of charging. And that will fit different use cases.
There's also another problem with that, what you just said, 15,000 chargers and what you said about the petrol stations and whatnot. Petrol pumps always normally work unless they run out. How many times do you go to an electric charge point? It's not working.
We'll be back with Sam in 2 seconds to hear how he responds to all those points made by Tony. But firstly, you may remember a few weeks ago, we were very kindly sponsored by Coin Corner, who make the world of buying and selling Bitcoin easier than ever. However, as I introduced Coin Corner and tried to explain a little bit about Bitcoin, I said that Elon Musk would even let you buy a Tesla using Bitcoin. Then a few hours before that episode went live, Elon Musk came out and said, you can no longer buy a Tesla using Bitcoin. And I looked a bit silly. Luckily, Coin Corner are pretty lighthearted about these things, and they realize they can't control the price of Bitcoin before any sponsorship goes live. And they very kindly offered to sponsor a number of future episodes of this podcast. So we're very grateful to have them on board. If all this chat about Bitcoin's got you intrigued, if you noticed the comment section of that episode going crazy with people talking about the pros and the cons of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, head over to coincorner.com/STG, where not only can you sign up and start trading Bitcoin, but you can also find out a lot more. There's some amazing information on there, so you can read up about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and decide if you want to get involved. If you do, as I say, coincorner.com/STG, or use my code STG when you sign up, and that way you'll get some sats, which are basically very small units of a Bitcoin. I got into the Bitcoin game late. I couldn't afford to buy a whole Bitcoin, so I own sats, just small units, and that's what you'll get for free when you sign up using that code STG or my link coincorner.com/STG. So yes, thanks to them for ignoring my slight mess up a few weeks ago and willing to come back and sponsor future episodes. For now, let's get back to Sam and hear how he responds to those points made by Tony.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the same as all technology. You know, how good was your first iPhone? You know, it's fair. You know, everything is developing.
I think
all the
you
time.
Can say. Well, what was the catchphrase?
Thanks.
Thank you can say thanks at that point because he said fair, so you can say thanks.
Because I've got something else to come back in. Okay, carry on.
But it's not any good. Thanks.
Yeah. Well done. But I think to carry on from Tony's point slightly, because I had this experience with the e-tron. So out of all these, you know, all these different people who are, you know, doing different kinds of charging points and different styles, what is that sort of, I basically went and I tried to charge the e-tron and it was different connectors, different plugs, different providers. And I basically couldn't find anything that seemed to fit or work. And that was so do you need to research and who's doing it well? Is there now 1,000 different types that you need to check on? What's that sort of?
Yeah, I mean, again, a bit like old technology where you had different USB connectors, et cetera, or different lightning connectors for your iPhone. You know, that eventually it streamed down to a handful. And we've got a couple of connector types for high power charging. One's called CHAdeMO, one's called CCS. Your older viewers might know VHS and Betamax in terms of two competing things.
I do.
DVD and Blu-ray for my generation.
Yeah, there we go. Well done. So a CCS typically is the one that's now winning that race in terms of the common connector type. But there are only really two for DC charging. And the second point around apps, et cetera, I totally agree with you. I've got like 19 different apps on my phone for different providers.
Joke.
But well, it is. But at the same time, a lot of it now is becoming contactless. You know, us and others just have a contactless solution so that if you want to become a member and you want to benefit from different rates as a result, and there's a degree of harboring loyalty, then fill your boots. But ultimately, you can turn up with a credit card and just pay. And that's what it needs to be, just like you do your coffee or your fuel, for that matter. And that's becoming more prevalent now as well, so that it's not complicated. There is only two connectors. You only got a credit or a debit card, and that's it, and you crack on. And it's definitely going that way, and it already is. So I take your point in terms of there's been lots of different Type 1, Type 2 style connectors for slower charging. There's CHAdeMO, CC, all these different connectors. But then, you know, petrol, diesel nozzles, you know, it, the same sort of principle. There's a couple of different choices, and you just know once you know, right?
So we should move on from infrastructure because I know there was a couple of the points which you raised, which I also want to go into. But as a sort of takeaway then, if someone just tuned in now weirdly for some bizarre reason to the podcast.
Halfway through.
Yeah, you never know, thanks. Tony. People trying to skip all the ads at the front. You know, the one takeaway is that I think we, or maybe you would admit that right now infrastructure is behind. You do have to maybe, sorry, this is me paraphrasing what you said and putting words in your mouth, but you know that you do have to go into it knowing what to do, trying to find the best ways around the current system, but there are plans in place and the infrastructure should be improving every, you know, year on year, month on month. Is that the kind of...
Yeah, it is. And one example I get, I'm lucky enough to be driving a Tesla and I've had it for a couple of years now.
You walked into that one.
I did. For a second, I forgot it was on my right hand side. I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased to be driving my Tesla. It's much quicker than most things on the road.
Oi, oi.
To 90 reality, mile an hour.
Go on. Don't let him interrupt you. Go on.
I do like to keep my license. But my point was going to be, until I got really interrupted, was there's something like 40 or 50 superchargers around the UK. And that was enough for me a couple of years ago because I could get anywhere I needed to do without too much of a diversion because the network is brilliant and you plug in and it just works. So if you're lucky enough to have a Tesla and that infrastructure was supported the number of vehicles that they had at the time and still does, what we now need is an infrastructure to support everybody else that isn't driving a Tesla but has the same sort of scenario. So my overarching point there is that with 40 or 50 locations around the UK, that was enough for me to get anywhere I needed to be, but on the basis of a much smaller population of EV drivers. So as that grows, so too does the infrastructure need to do to support it. But providing we've got, you know, several hundred, probably several thousand, I suspect in the fullness of time, locations like that for everyone to utilize, much like a petrol station, then it will work.
You'll need more EV charging points than you will petrol stations as well, by the way, because it takes longer. So you need more.
Currently takes longer.
Yeah. And we've got 36 charge points at our forecourt, which is way more than a petrol pump. And you can charge in 20 minutes. So that's now. It's going to get better as things like the Onyx 5 and the Taycan, etc. They demonstrate the ability of a higher voltage platform that can distribute more energy more quickly. So it's getting to the petrol station level, albeit... We just started and there's a long way to go.
Fair. But and as well, your Tesla as well has also got the best network of charging, okay. By the way.
Yeah. Well, can we jump in on this actually? Because this is literally the point I wanted important. To move on to. Because of course, vehicles is kind of the next sort of section, I suppose. And we will often get into trouble with many things on this podcast, but around Teslas, because a bit like with iPhones or mainly the early adopter mentality, Tesla fans seem to be diehards, and there seems to be no acceptance that anything could ever be better than a Tesla. Are they still leaps and bounds above any of the competition in terms of not only vehicle technologies, but infrastructure? Or nowadays, is a Taycan or is some of the other offerings on that level and you know, operating the same way as a Tesla was?
I think there's a couple of things there. Firstly, Tesla created a car, but they also created a network at the same time, which the others haven't done.
They're miles ahead in terms of network.
So in that regard, they thought about it and they create, because you know, the big OEMs, they produce vehicles, somebody else deals with the petrol, which is the stuff that you burn and waste huge amounts of energy and pollute the planet. But apart from that, I think that's one...
We're going to come back to that.
Damn it.
You stoked the fire, I keep
sticking twigs in a hornet's nest, don't I?
Yeah. Really do.
Yeah, I was the wrong person to invite.
I literally glanced at Taylor, they're like, oh yeah. God. So go on.
On the one hand, Tesla's done a good job in creating infrastructure to support their own vehicles, but also they built something from the ground up. And that, you know, that's another reason why I'm a reasonable Tesla fanboy, I suppose, at the moment, because I love the fact that they've thought about it from the ground up, like something that didn't exist before. It hasn't been converted from a former petrol chassis, etc. And that does have its advantages in the same way that I think you got, and this is where I'm moving into the world that I don't know, but I believe that, you know, convertible cars that were designed to be convertible in the first place are typically better than the ones that were converted later. And I think the same sort of logic applies, that if you build something from the ground up, it's going to be better. And some of the initial early vehicles were designed from something previous, you know, so the chassis was not created in the way that was suitable for an EV. But that's changing now. You know, things like the i3, I've got one of those, my wife drives that. You know, that was built from the ground up, great little town car, fantastic little thing, and does an amazing job, and again, from the ground up. And I think a lot of the technology in a Tesla, you know, is pretty impressive. It is a bit like driving an iPhone on wheels. You've got one screen in the middle, it does everything. And that's not to everyone's taste, but I typically get in a traditional car now and look around and think, oh, this is a bit old fashioned and a bit slow, isn't it? You know, and that's just because I'm so used to this, effectively feeling a little bit like I'm sitting in the future. And you know, that's probably why people get a bit...
Well, you are.
You know, glowy-eyed. That's not the right expression. No, doughy-eyed, whatever. Yeah. Because it's designed to be so modern
if that's your thing. But for me, as a sort of bit of a techie, I just love the simplicity of it, you know.
For sure.
Why have fan vents when you don't need them, if you just have blow air up and down? You know, why it's more stuff for dirt to get stuck in. You know, it's all little things where they've just made it so simple. There's new stuff coming out now that, you know, and again, top end, like the EQS, for example, but it looks incredible. The interior is like
is
something
that the
else.
Merc? Is that yeah. the Merc? Yeah.
So they are catching up, but it's amazing how long it's taken them to get anywhere near. I mean, the Tesla Model S is what, 13, 14 years old now, something mm-hmm. like that?
Yeah.
And it's still modern, you know, by comparison to the new stuff coming out from some of the traditional OEMs. So I think they've done a really good job in just from, you know, blank sheet of paper and doing a pretty good job.
So on that then, let's move on to the sort of the vehicle side. You mentioned that's a big part of what you're doing, GridServe. The two points you made, which I guess kind of cross over into each other, that the batteries are a little bit like mobile phone batteries and that their sort of shelf life might be 7 or 8 years. So that's the thing, right? Is how is battery technology coming on? Is that a concern? I.e., do they eventually just deplete? What happens to a secondhand EV? Tony's definitely got some thoughts and opinions on that side of things.
Yep.
Because used values, especially when it comes to Tesla and things like that, is that market even there? And Tony, you'll definitely chime in on this. But Sam, as a sort of first point of view, you know, let's attack those two points, mobile phone like or 7 and 8 year shelf life.
Yeah. Okay. So firstly, it's not like a mobile phone. The battery technology and composite is similar. But there's an entire battery management system that looks after all the individual cells in an EV. So they're far, far more protected. So whether or not the mobile phones are designed to wear out over an amount of time, they might be. So that
you can bet your life they are.
Yeah, well, I didn't say that, but you did. But I think the reality
is... by Apple again.
constantly being sued on this podcast. Oh, yeah.
So the battery management system in an EV is completely superior to that of a phone, so you just can't compare the two. There is a degradation factor, and I think in Tesla's terms, I think they say it's about 1% every year. Typically on warranties of all the major manufacturers are about 7 or 8 years or 100,000 miles, which is, you know, pretty good. And that's not to suggest that then they just fall off a cliff and die, because they don't. You know, the history of the Nissan Leaf, for example, which has been around 8 forever, you know, they've got hardly any problems with any batteries for year after year and thousands of vehicles, and they're still going strong. Even when you get to the point, wherever that may be, 10, 15 years into the future, when the battery degradation is such that it justifies a change, doesn't mean you have to throw the vehicle away. Just means the batteries need changing, which again is better for the environment. But those batteries can be repurposed. They don't go in the bin. They can be used for battery storage. So just because they don't necessarily work to go discharge and recharge many, many, many times anymore, they can be used in a house environment to store energy, you know, from solar on the roof or whatever. So they have a second life in that context. And then they've got a third one, because after that, and you're now looking at sort of 25, 30 years down the road from when they were made, and they're still being used for something. The third option, or the third stage, if you like, is to break those batteries down, recycle the components, and then put them back into batteries again. So they've effectively got three very justifiable and proven ways of recycling that same battery pack to put it into something else and reuse it. Conversely, you know, petrol engine, you stuck some fuel in it, which was produced by dead dinosaurs 300 million years ago, set it on fire, 70% of the energy is lost in heat. And then you kick out loads of carcinogenic pollutants for your children.
Sounds awesome.
No,
you know, so,
yeah, it's a different kettle of fish completely.
We've
yeah.
got rain because of people like you. Have you seen all this rain?
Certainly don't start. You're going to get, that's going to start a
people
hole
like,
in
people like me.
The comments are really going to start going wild. So let's get on to used values. Because like any technology, right? Try selling a laptop that's 2 years old. Try selling an iPhone that's 5 years old. There's just no inherent value. And surely, as this technology improves, as more manufacturers become EV, that's got to put a big question mark on used EV sales. Because I would assume if you're buying a 5 or 6 year old EV with that degradation and things like that, not only are you getting old tech and old charging abilities and everything, that battery performance is going to be less, surely. So is there even a market for that? And I'll definitely, we'll go to Sam first, but I do want Tony's thoughts on this, because yeah, what does that look like, the used market for EVs?
I thought you were going to Tony first.
Is it you first, for sure, because okay. I'll let you get a word in.
Yeah, I mean, again, like many things, used market is in the early stages because the vehicles haven't been around that long. Things are starting to come through to the secondhand market. And I think like a traditional vehicle, you've got depreciation on the because of the fact that there's wear and tear and you know, how much it's been used, how many miles something has traveled determines how much its secondhand value is. And I think in EVs, it's not going to be any different. On the good news for EVs is that the maintenance is next to nothing. The brakes are hardly ever used because it uses its own engine to regenerative braking slows the car down without needing to use your discs or your brakes very often, your pads. So there's lots of reasons why longevity of EVs is justifiable, because there's so few are moving parts and so many less things to wear out. But similarly, you've got the battery concern, if there is one. And I think that's something that's going to have to be really well thought out in the secondhand market, because what is the value of a secondhand vehicle if its battery's been replaced, for example? That will materially change the overall value of the vehicle, which is something that's, I guess, materially different to what you would use to compare, you know, the glasses guide for EV for vehicles generally. You know, what is that secondhand value based on certain parameters? I think we're going to have to look at what the situation is with the batteries, what their state of health is, and much like on your iPhone, you can check the battery health. You can do that in an EV just the same. You can do it remotely. You don't even have to check the car out physically. You can just go online and find out what the state of health is, and that will ultimately determine what the asset value is at that precise moment. So, again, like all technology, we seem to be clever in the way that we understand and manage that data to then determine what the secondhand value is. But there's 30-something million cars, I think, on the road today, and a quarter of a million EVs. So there isn't going to be a strong secondhand market yet because it's so early, but there will be in the next 4, 5, 6 years. You know, as we get closer to that change in regulation, there'll be more and more on the market available as a lot of sort of third or 4 year lease of vehicles start to come back on stream.
So Tony, we've spoken about it before. You know, the fact that almost you wouldn't be nervous, but you wouldn't want to be taking on a 7, 8 year old EV just because you don't know what it's going to do on your forecourt, but also because who's going to want it whilst the tech move forward. So what are your thoughts on future value secondhand EVs?
So I have an example of a Leaf that was about 10 years old. The battery was basically knackered. It writes the car off. Because they're not worth anything. You know, you buy a 7 or 8 year old Leaf, it's only $5,000.
And so, you say the battery's knackered, what, you couldn't get it to charge properly, it wouldn't
well,
run?
Well, it'd come in at a dealership that I deal with.
Okay.
And he said, do you know what to do? I haven't got a clue. He said, the batteries have had it. It was an old Leaf. Mm-hmm. But
how do you know the batteries had it?
Because that's what they told me.
Oh, okay.
So that's just one example. Mm-hmm.
It's made you nervous about...
The chances are you'd need to know what the battery health really was rather than someone just say it's knackered. It might just be that it was one cell that was nearly replacing.
I'm sure they checked me.
No, but also, but this is the whole thing, right, is that there's an education that's needed globally with EVs. This is not just a... okay, great, you know, we can all charge or we can't charge, or they're more expensive, they're less expensive. We've all got to understand how to use these cars, how to buy them, how to sell them, how to run them, how to maintain them. It's such a point that I never even considered was maintenance. You know, of course, we're all used to servicing costs with petrol cars, but
there isn't any.
But
there isn't
any, yeah. But that's, I just literally hadn't even thought of that.
Which is a plus.
Say thanks.
Thanks.
That is the plus.
Yeah, you can, or one of the pluses.
You can wrap that up even wider. I mean, let's pick two vehicles, Mercedes EQC electric and the GLC equivalent. So the GLC is, I've got it written down actually, it's about 10-12,000 pounds cheaper, the petrol equivalent vehicle.
Okay.
So the original lease cost is going to be more for the EV, but when you add in your fuel cost, your maintenance cost, the road tax, it's actually cheaper to run the EV than it is the petrol equivalent, despite the fact that it's a lot more, the value is much higher at the moment. So as the value of the EV starts to get closer to parity with petrol, which I believe is predicted now to be around 2027.
When's it cheaper?
2027.
So it's already cheaper now, but when not just to buy outright, but when you add in all of those things, and maintenance is one element of it, whereby when you've added the fuel, the maintenance and all the other things already.
But you don't do that all in year one, do you? You do that over a 12-year period. So most people don't
not over a lease, you know, three or four years.
Yeah,
all the fuel and the maintenance that's going into
If
you add it all together, the EV is already cheaper to run. And that's not even to get into the benefit in kind tax on a car like that. So you're either paying maybe 30 or 40 pounds benefit in kind a month for the EV, you'll be paying nearly £300 a month on top for the GLC equivalent on company car tax.
That's only if
you're
a business user though, right?
Yeah, if you're a business user. But even with that, and that's a massive thing, but even without that, most EVs are cheaper to run on a day-to-day on a basis of taking a 3 or 4 year lease.
Only on a lease. So it's only if you're a business user.
Well, no, on a personal contract hire, you can do exactly the same thing. And you have a brand new vehicle, and in 3 or 4 years' time, you can take another brand new vehicle.
But you don't get the same perks if it's personal than what you do lease, than what you do business.
From a company car, no, but from a general running, you're not paying any fuel, you're not paying any maintenance. So overall,
there's still potential savings to be made.
Yeah,
over a petrol. Yeah. But I guess
that finance is nudging parity, if not better, for EVs now, and that's on the basis of the original vehicle being more expensive.
I don't think there'll be anything in it. I honestly bet if you put the two cars together spec for spec, I bet the EV would be easily a £200 or £300 dearer per month. I would think. Because it's got to be, firstly, because of the price of the car.
But the point being, then, the more you might be spending on the price or the monthly, is you're saving on the running costs.
Okay. Yeah. So you've got to look at total cost of ownership, not just the value of the vehicle.
I completely get that. But what I'm saying is that would you spend that extra on servicing petrol? Because don't forget,
petrol, for sure.
I mean, well, depending on how many miles you do. We've already said it's just the same. It's just the same. It's not free to charge an electric car, mate, by the way. We've already said it's similar money in terms. So you wouldn't save on petrol at all. That's a myth.
What do you mean it's not similar money? It costs me a couple of quid to charge my car up at home.
I think it depends
at
on...
At home?
Yeah, well, even on our network, it's maybe £4 or £5 to chuck in a couple hundred miles. You know, it's nothing like petrol. Not even close.
And the point being, you can't refuel your car at home.
No,
you can't refuel your car at home. No.
And I wake up in the morning with a full tank of petrol. I wake up in the morning with a full battery.
Yeah, yeah. And I get that bit. But what I'm saying is, it's not £4 or £5. I've never ever experienced it being £4 or £5 to charge your car up. It might be at home, but anywhere. We've already said that these charge points are a rip-off.
I think the point being, I'm so with you. I agree that it's definitely not free. It's definitely not super, super cheap. There are costs involved, but this comes back to what I was saying earlier, where I think at the moment, it's about learning the infrastructure and learning how it can work for you. Identifying where it's affordable, where it's quick, where it's best for your car, where you know you can get in, which to me is a massive barrier to entry. That to me just goes way too much effort, way too much hassle. If my mum did go out and buy that new Evoque as an EV and thought, screw it, I'm going to give this a go. 3 days in, she'd be calling me crying. So this is, what is the point? Because she'd have to figure that stuff out. As an early adopter, as an EV enthusiast, and I know Shmoo150, another guy in MySpace who runs with a Taycan, said exactly this, is that when you're on board, when you're happy to adopt these things, you can kind of almost figure out these things almost as a bit of fun and a bit of a game. Like, oh yeah, that I can go there and I can charge a whole battery, £5, off I go. Brilliant, what a saving. Idiots like Tony and myself will just want to charge the damn thing. And I live in Southwest London in this e-tron. I Google charging spots. I tried three, nothing. But the one I ended up with did, as I say, cost me 30, 40 quid. So as an everyday non-EV, you know, enthusiast, that is a barrier to entry to me. And whilst I might have done it wrong and you're saying that I could have saved, Tony's right in the sense where you have the potential for those costs to be as high if you're not clever enough to try and navigate the system currently.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why we've got to improve on it, you know, because it is embryonic. It needs to get better and it will. And it already is. I mean, the process of charging the services now is one or two steps. And you plug it in, you swipe your card. That's it. There's nothing else to do. But that's not the same everywhere yet. And the reliability isn't as good as that everywhere yet either. But it's already proven that it can be done. It's just we need more scale now. That's all.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, our hesitance is, you know, we're seeing all these manufacturers pushing towards EVs. They're all releasing, oh, we're not going to make petrol anymore. It's all EVs. And we're like, oh God, the infrastructure isn't ready. But maybe that pressure will create the changes in the infrastructure we need quicker. Because I suppose the more demand... The more infrastructure we put in place.
Like everything, it's supply and demand, isn't it? And now that we've got this massive uptake, you know, registrations of EVs has been positive throughout lockdown, despite petrol and diesel going through the floor. So there's clearly a shift in this direction. By registrations from the stats alone demonstrate that it's increasing. And as a result of that, there's people like us and many others like us, all the charge point operators that are saying, well, hang on a minute, these vehicles are coming now. They really are coming at some pace. Now we've got to crank it up and deliver the infrastructure to support that, to give you guys the comfort of knowing that it's not an inconvenience. And as you said, I've been doing it a long time, so I'm so used to just ensuring that it's not going to be. But for your mum, it just needs to be something simple. She just needs to know where to go, pin on a map. She turns up, she plugs it in, she swipes a card, and that's it, done. Go and have a coffee. And we're nearly there. But, you know, my caveat here, as surrounded by two petrol heads, is that it's you know, it's going to take some time to put it together, but it's workable now. It's doable now. I've been driving them for 20 years. It's workable. definitely, definitely workable. But it needs to be more than just workable. It needs to be practical and easy.
It's workable.
And we're nearly there.
It's workable with 250,000 cars, not 30 million.
At the moment.
At the moment.
Well, no, it's not. But that everything has to take that. You can't just switch everything on. You can't just have an infrastructure for 30 million cars when there's only 250,000 out there.
Which would have
we haven't got time, by the way. We've only got to 2030.
Well, okay, so this is what I wanted to come on to, right? I think this is the point, is that there is also this inherent pressure from, you know, governments, from, I just think, the global environment, and the fact that there is this switch in mindset to let's save the earth, let's save the world. And EV seems to be the route that everyone's telling us we need to go or we should be going. I do want to touch very quickly at the end on things like e-fuels, hydrogen, etc. But to keep our focus on EVs for a second, let's just tackle the final myth, which wasn't on your sheet, which we spoke about, is the thought that these are, I don't know what we wouldn't call it, environmentally friendly or more environmentally friendly than theoretically petrol or diesel cars, because the manufacturing, the providing of the electricity, which you mentioned, a lot of it's coming from renewable, a lot of it's still fossil fuel, right? I mean, there is still, you know, a lot of bad stuff going on to get us the EVs that we're using and the electricity that we're powering them with.
Costs more to make an electric car than it does a petrol car.
Cost in terms of finance or in terms of carbon emissions?
In terms of, I'm not sure about carbon emission, but definitely in terms of cost of money.
Well, okay. Which is why the cars are currently more expensive, but I think by 2027 they'll be cost parity. So it's coming, again, economies of scale, it's coming down all the time. To your point around the emissions creation from the vehicles being made, two things. One is same for petrol or diesel. There's still a carbon emission to create anything. So
less or more?
There's likes. I can't remember the name of the factory now where the ID3 is made, but that's already a carbon neutral factory. So they're already producing without any carbon by offsetting it in other ways.
How are they offsetting it?
Well, it'll be through, you know, the renewable energy that they use, or by
planting of trees.
Yeah, the materials that they use, all that kind of stuff. All of the we lease vehicles too, and all of those vehicles can be supplied with energy included. All of that's renewable from our solar farms, and we plant 100 trees for every vehicle to contribute towards any potential carbon emissions during production. We don't actually need to do that because that's not part of our world, but we do it anyway. And in certain cases, like for the ID3, we'll end up being carbon negative because they're already carbon neutral at production. So it won't be that long, I suspect, until there'll be almost an obligation, if you like, probably by law otherwise, that all of the car manufacturers need to create a carbon zero production line. Like I think Audi is also another one that's getting there as well. So I think that has to happen, because it has to happen in everything we do. We can't stop burning stuff. We've got to start recycling and doing that in every part of commerce, really.
And again, as a chicken and egg, the more demand. Can we build enough wind farms? Can we plant enough trees? I mean, if we were all, again, to use this example, everyone in London to switch, and we suddenly got that demand on the grid, are we going to have to lean on fossil fuels now? I mean, like, when do we run out of space to build wind farms, for example?
Well, and we touched on this before, but we've already demonstrated in years previous where we've had periods of the year where there's been no fossil fuel requirements at all, because it's all been done through renewables, and that will just keep getting better. Solar farms are being built all the time. So our dependency on fossil fuels is diminishing daily. So that's already been proven out. And we know that we know there's enough energy there. Like I said before, it's just about the when, not have we got enough. It's about when we use it. We just got to get smarter about that, which is really just a simple algorithm for everybody's timing in terms of utilizing their energy needs for things when they don't need them, when they're asleep, like cars. We charge them in the middle of the night, not at 5 o'clock when everyone's cooking their dinner. You know, and it's just a simple way of balancing the grid out.
Tony, was there anything in particular which, coming into this, you were desperate to attack Sam with or try and
anything
address?
Else?
Yeah, because anything, anything else. We've actually taken up more of your time than we should have, but I do have a couple of patrons things that I just want to do as a quick fire section. Before we get into that, Tony, I don't want you to walk away and go, well, yeah, but I should have...
No. There was the bit about when they come to the end of their life, in terms of what we do with them then, in, you know, electric cars. I know you said you can recycle the batteries.
Yep.
We can buy new ones and keep the car, because, like you said, they don't really need servicing. So miles, you know, I know Teslas that have done 100-odd thousand miles, and the values are still quite strong.
Yep.
The biggest problem I have with a Tesla, and Tesla as a company, they don't have a used car market. They only sell new cars. They don't sell used cars. So does that tell you everything straight away? Do they have any trust in their actual product as a used car?
As in you can't go and buy a used car from a Tesla dealership?
No, they only sell new cars. So when they go back into the used car network, but not Tesla.
Same as McLaren. Sorry, I had to drop that one.
I didn't have an answer for that, so I'm really glad that you filled it.
If they had such trust in their products, why haven't Tesla created a used car market? Because the used car market essentially is more profitable than the new car market.
Yeah, but I mean, Sam, if you don't have an answer there, all I would say is that I think the Tesla business model is a very intriguing one that we need a lot of questions. The fact that they are also a network provider, all these different things, I don't always think that they're not a traditional business.
But then
Audi going to be buying back e-trons? Are Mercedes going to be buying back EQSs? That's the more interesting thought for me, because if the mainstream manufacturers don't seem to have confidence in their used EV products, then we've got a bigger question to ask. But I think Tesla is such a weird and interesting case study that I wouldn't necessarily judge them.
But they're the market leaders.
Yeah, but they're also the newest as well, aren't they? And so they've got far less vehicles out there. And you said it yourself, the vehicles are out there doing 100, way over 100,000 miles and still just going along just fine. So I think it's going to take a bit longer for the second-hand market to fill with Teslas.
But in terms of electric vehicles, though, Sam, they've got the most still, right?
I don't know.
I bet they have.
Be an interesting...
Yeah, they will.
Definitely in California they do.
But I bet they've still sold more electric vehicles than anyone else. So you can't compare that with what Mercedes sell in, right across the board, because that's combustion engines. If you compare eggs with eggs and electric vehicles, Tesla will be miles in front.
We're going to look at that stat. We'll talk about that next week. I know, but I'm intrigued because you say that, but we know now for the last few months, Porsche have been selling more Taycans in the UK than anything else. So
there's been quite a few coming back as well, by the way.
Okay.
We won't talk about that bit.
That's more specific. Right, so let's get into this, because I say the patrons have submitted some questions. A lot of this we're going to have already touched on, so we'll try this as quick fire.
Yep.
So, we won't go too much. Nick Lloyd, are EVs just a stopgap? I mentioned things like e-fuels, hydrogen and stuff like that. Do you really see this as the future, or is this just a temporary fix? Yeah.
I can't really speak about e-fuels, but hydrogen, it's a hugely energy intensive way of making the energy, which in order to demonstrate the hydrogen in the first place. I think...
Sorry, my dog's now starting to come over some attention. Okay.
I think... I'm not a massive hydrogen fan. I think there's potentially a use case for it in more of the larger trucks and the larger trains and buses and things like that. But I think for cars, I think EV is probably going to be around. I mean, it's still even hydrogen's still an electric car, but I think batteries are improving at such an alarming rate that it won't be long before there's 300-500 miles in a tank, so to speak, and then we'll be fine. So I don't think hydrogen is necessarily the right way forward for cars.
Okay. John Baker, I'm thinking of getting solar to generate some electricity for home and eventually automotive use. Do you think this is going to be more commonplace in future? Basically people trying to be renewable, supplying their own renewable energy at home.
Yep, I've just started doing it myself. I've got two electric cars on the driveway. I'm putting solar in at the moment and batteries so that I can generate my own energy. And then that energy goes back into the house and the car in the future, and then I'll just keep upgrading it and hopefully get it bigger and bigger as I go along. But yes, generating energy from your own roof through solar is a logical thing for me to do. But I mean, there is obviously a payback time to do that. But again, something like solar, again, the price point is coming down all the time.
Amazing. Matt Pickford, will we be able to get wireless charging like you can do on your phone? Do you see that? Wireless charging in place?
Not a massive fan. Again, I think in the commercial world, it might have its place in taxis and buses. I think again for cars, it's very, very expensive when a cable is equally as well, far, far more practical. The static and dynamic induction. Static being when you park up and it works, and dynamic is the concept of doing it on the motorways as you're going along, it's charging. But I think the cost of that would just be astronomic. So again, I think as the batteries get better and we're into the 300-500 mile range, you don't need dynamic induction charging. And I think the static stuff is probably more for commercial traffic.
And a cable's not more practical if you live in an apartment, by the way. It's a pain in the arse.
Well, not if they're already plugged in downstairs. You mean out your window is what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Not many apartments in London have even got car parking spaces.
Well, it doesn't work for induction charging either then, does it? But I mean, that's where the public infrastructure needs to improve.
Yeah, that it's not just in London, in general... We see all these apartments. I mean, they've even gone up around here, high rises, because land's a premium in the UK.
Of course.
You know, and we can go on and on and on about this. There's parts of this country and other countries, because we've got to talk about world, where EVs just won't be practical.
You know, well, yes, we've mentioned that before. Peru, even parts of America,
parts of
China, you know.
Just won't work.
I don't think they'll ever be able to input the infrastructure, but maybe, and probably a point we could have touched on, maybe we can try it quickly, is as the technology moves forward, is there ever a point where we could see 1,000-mile range from EVs, or is there a point where the batteries can't get small enough and the weight can't get low enough?
I don't know where the technology ends. I mean, do any of us know that? I don't think having a 1,000 miles is necessarily... It's just not needed, is it? Especially in the UK. I mean, we're an island and there's only so far you can go in one direction. You know, and I think it was the chairman of VW a few years back said, we've all got a bladder range of about 200 miles anyway. So there is an element of needing to stop on a long journey, no matter where you are in the world. You need to stop, you need to rest. You know, it's by law for lorries anyway. And if you can stop because mentally you need a rest, and whilst you're mentally resting, you can get enough energy in your batteries while you're doing that, then you're recharging your own batteries as well as the one in your vehicle, then you're covering two bases and it's fine. So if it means that a 10, 15 minute break and you're getting a good few hundred miles in your EV battery in that time, then you're sorted. So you don't necessarily need to have 1,000 miles in a vehicle to do that.
I suppose the benefit of being in a petrol or diesel car across a desert or whatever is you can have a jerry can with you. And I suppose at the moment, you know, that is the question of these more remote locations, more hardcore environments. You know, what's your what's the possibility there?
Maybe if you live in the outback,
charging packs or whatever it would be.
Yeah, I mean, at risk of teeing myself up for another fall here. I mean, you've got Formula E cars traveling 170 miles an hour. You've got you've got EV adventurers that are traveling pole to pole on electric vehicles, demonstrating the ability. And it's not easy, but they're adventurers and they're doing it to demonstrate the art of the possible. And that will continually get better.
My last question, because I say we're going to go well over here. Edward Tainish, just because I want to know, and I think I know the answer, and it's going to upset me. In your opinion, which manufacturer is making the best EV product? And actually, you know what? I'm just going to say, ruling out Tesla.
I think, ironically, some might say, I think VW are doing a good job with the ID3, ID4. I think they look great. It's really hard to say. Mercedes with their EQ range, it just seems to get better and better all the time. So yeah, they're the two that would immediately spring to mind.
That excites you, basically. You're excited by the cars. Because I'm excited as a petrolhead. I like some of these EVs coming out. So you're not sitting there being like, oh, it's only Tesla.
It's odd as well that you've said the Volkswagen, what's it called?
ID3,
ID4.
So I know from my end of the business, they've got problems with them cars.
Oh, God.
Right. So they won't know that.
They had problems with diesel as well, just not that long ago. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't. They did actually. To be fair, but what I'm saying is that that's one of your
in a minute, Tony. In less than a minute, touch on that problem. Go on, just do it, because we're going to finish up. I can't let you say that and just be like, oh, just so you know, there are problems there. We're here to do EVs. Go on. What's that problem?
Apparently, there's charging problems with them.
What do you mean?
Well, that's all I know.
I'm going to summarize in a second what I think I've learned, and you can say what you think you might have learned, Tony. But to be on the fence here, you can't just say there's charging problems. Yeah. It's like when we say with McLaren, oh, they don't work. We have to explain why they don't work. And so this is a big thing, I think, that is another barrier with EVs. And for us as petrolheads, we don't like, because you hear things like this. When I see Shmi struggling to charge his Taycan, getting in a headache, I'm like, you know, I would have at one point thought of getting a Taycan Cross Turismo. What a cool looking car. But now I'm like, oh, not a chance in hell. So when you say that, in my head, I go, oh, crap, well, ID3, ID4, load of crap. But we have to figure out what those problems are.
Okay, fine. So I would have guessed charging problems. The cars won't take a charge. So I'd need to find... I can find out.
Find out. We'll pick that up next week. Yeah.
We've had hundreds of them charge at our forecourt without a problem at all. So
I'm not saying that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying my...
But you did a second ago.
This is what I've been told, Dad, that he can say that he's had hundreds of them. That's probably all of them, actually. If it's all of them I've ever made.
No, but this is the thing, is I think it's very easy in a petrolhead community or in a slightly, you know, old school minded community to make quick assumptions about EVs. And I do that as well. And we've done it on this podcast many times. And there is that point. But with what we've learned today and what we've got to accept and got to appreciate, there are two sides of the stories. And this is definitely your world. You're, say, an EV evangelist. It's how you spent your life the last 15 years. So you're going to be very pro this. I still am skeptical. I think what I've learned from you is that there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of things to be positive about. Things are moving forward in a rapid place. For me, it's still not there for me. It doesn't convince me that I'm ready or I would want to. I think it's too much for me to take on at the moment. I'm happy in petrols and diesels or whatever, but I'm totally on board with the hybrid. Within the city, I think EVs are great. I'm just not ready with everything that I've seen to jump into an EV on a, you know, in a daily car basis, my one and only car personally.
I think it'd be good to have this conversation again in a matter of months, maybe, you know, just to see how the infrastructure has changed in that short period of time and see whether you still got the same opinion. And I was never expecting to come into this lion's den and convert you guys into EVs, because that was never going to happen. But, you know, I've been driving thousands and thousands and thousands of miles, long, long distances, and it's not been an issue, you know, and that's going to be the norm. It's going to be the norm. And the last thing I want to do is come on a forum like this and go, well, look out, guys, because the ban's coming, whether you like it or not. That's not going to help, is it? But the reality is that is what's going to happen, and the transition will work. And I know it's practical because I've been doing it a long
time. Time is of the essence. But another problem we have is will we be ready in 2030? I can't see we will be.
Well, we've got 169 service station style locations to upgrade, which will be done by the end of this year. We've got another 100 electric forecourts to build in the next 5 years. And that's just what we're doing alone. The likes of BP and Shell and others, you know, you've mentioned it on previous podcasts around what they're doing with forecourts in London and changing them, converting them to electric. If everyone is doing that, and they clearly are because it's in the news every week, then we will be ready, because it's coming. The infrastructure is coming. It's in the news literally every week. So you know, time will tell, but it's all coming through now as the uptake of EV registrations goes up. I think has been especially in the last few months, has been a real topic about, hang on a minute, infrastructure. But we're all there and we're all doing it. We're all putting it in.
I think a few months would be too soon to have you back on. I think it's a couple of years. We'll have him on in a couple of years.
He doesn't want to see you.
I'm trying to work out whether that means I've done a good job and he doesn't want me back. Whether he just doesn't like me and wants to get rid of me.
No. I'd happily have you on every week, because we're going to run out of time and there's so much more we need to discuss around this. But what I'm saying is that if you're saying that the rate of
growth and change,
will go that quickly in a few months, let's really see where it is in like 2024 or 2025. I hope you come on back before then, but you know what I mean?
No, you're right. And one thing we've discussed off air a lot, Sam, is the thought of Tony and I going and buying an EV and living with it. But actually, you know, Tim's doing a great job of documenting that at the moment. And I think having Tony in his current mindset, it just would be hell. Maybe that'll be it. Maybe, you know, six to 12 months, we'll try and we'll get an EV, maybe even as a long-term loan, if some very kind manufacturer out there is willing to put themselves through that pain. And then we can get you back on. We can talk through our experience and see, you know, and we'll use this episode to look back and address some points and see how more miserable Tony is. But thank you so much for coming on. As I say, you know, we're taking up quite a lot of your time, so I appreciate it massively. You know, I do think you've done a great job at tackling a lot of the things that we've definitely either made up or made assumptions about. Very good, Tony.
I knew this was going to be tough. I don't know how well I've managed to.
No, you've done incredibly well. I say, you know, definitely, you know, correct some of our wrongs.
2-1 as well, which is, although. Well, no, Sam, you're a little bit more accommodating.
I'm definitely pro change, but I'm just, you know, I'm not there yet. But I'm appreciative of what's going on. So yeah, thank you so much, and really appreciate it. If people want to, I guess, can they follow you? Can they check out what GridServer up to? What's the best thing? Are you?
Follow me. Typically on LinkedIn. Please do follow GridServer. There's so much that we're doing with more than just cars, but more than just leasing cars, but building solar and hybrid farms as well as everything else. So there's loads of information there. I do an EV cafe every month, which is for anyone in the community to understand more about EVs. We get loads of high profile people on to talk about EVs and understand them better. So there's lots of different forums.
Amazing. Perfect. Well, yes. And if you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. Well, I can't speak today. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And we'll be back with you next week, probably just to dissect this episode. So make sure you subscribe, turn on notifications, and keep following us, whatever platform you're listening. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.